Chapter 2. September 15, 1906. The Mississippi River below Hannibal, Missouri. Soon after the 20th century was born, steamboating on the Mississippi began to fade. Few passenger steamboats still reigned in style. The St. Peter was one of the last grand passenger boats to have survived the onslaught of the railroads. 250 feet long and 75 feet wide, she was a splendid example of palatial elegance, with side-curving stairways, plush passenger cabins, and a magnificent main dining room with the finest food to be found anywhere. Ostentatious salons were provided for the ladies, while the men smoked their cigars and played cards in handsome rooms adorned with mirrors and paintings. Card games on steamboats plying the river were notorious for their card-sharp gamblers. Many passengers left steamboats poorer than when they boarded. At one table in the gambling room of the St. Peter, in a quiet corner away from the main action, two men were enjoying a game of five-card stud. At first glance, the scene looked like any other in the room, but a closer look revealed that no chips sat on the green felt table. Joseph Van Dorn calmly studied his hand before laying down two cards.
"Good thing we're not in this for the money," he said, smiling, "or I would owe you $8,000.
Colonel Henry Danzler, director of the United States government's Criminal Investigation Department, smiled in return.
"If you cheated like I do, we'd be even."
Van Dorn was a congenial man in his early 40s. His cheeks and chin were buried under a magnificent red Burnside's beard that matched what remained of the hair that circled his bald dome. His face was dominated by a Roman nose, and his brown eyes looked sad and melancholy, but his looks and manner were deceiving. Irish-born, he bore a name known and respected throughout the country for tenacity in tracking down murderers, robbers, and other desperados. The criminal underworld of the time knew he would chase them to the ends of the earth. Founder and chief of the renowned Van Dorn Detective Agency, he and his agents had prevented political assassinations, hunted down many of the West's most feared outlaws, and helped organize the country's first Secret Service agency.
"You'd still deal yourself more aces than me," he said affably.
Danzler was an enormous man, tall and mammoth in girth, weighing slightly over 300 pounds, yet he could move as effortlessly as a tiger. His salt-and-pepper hair was immaculately trimmed and brushed, shining under the light that streamed in through the boat's big windows. His blue-green eyes had a soft glow to them, yet they seemed to analyze and record everything going on about him. A veteran and hero of the Spanish-American War, he had charged up San Juan Hill with Captain John Pershing and his black buffalo soldiers of the 10th Cavalry and had served with distinction in the Philippines against the Moros. When the government's Criminal Investigation Department was authorized by Congress, President Roosevelt asked him to become its first director. Danzler opened the lid of a large pocket watch and stared at the hands.
"Your man is 5 minutes late."
"Isaac Bell is my best agent.
He always gets his man, and occasionally a woman, too.
If he's late, there's a good reason."
"You say he's the one who apprehended the assassin Ramos Kelly before he could shoot President Roosevelt?"
Van Dorn nodded.
"And he rounded up the Barton gang in Missouri.
He shot and killed three of them before the other two surrendered to him."
Danzler stared at the famous detective.
"And you think he's the man to stop our mass murderer and bank robber?"
"If anyone can stop the killer, Isaac can."
"What is his family background?"
"Very wealthy," answered Van Dorn. "His father and grandfather were bankers. You've heard of the American States Bank of Boston?"
Danzler nodded.
"Indeed, I have an account there myself."
"Isaac is very affluent. His grandfather left him $5 million in his will, thinking Isaac would take his place as head of the bank one day. It never happened. Isaac preferred detective work to banking. I'm lucky to have him.
Densler caught a shadow on his arm. He looked up and found himself looking into soft blue eyes with a slight violet cast, eyes that had looked over horizons to see what was beyond. The effect was almost mesmerizing, as though they were searching deep into Densler's inner thoughts. Densler could size up a man as precisely as he could a horse. The intruder was tall and lean, stood well over 6 feet, and weighed no more than 175 pounds. A large flaxen mustache that covered his entire upper lip conformed with the thick mass of neatly barbered blonde hair. His hands and fingers were long and nimble and hung loosely, almost casually, at his sides. There was a no-nonsense look about him. The colonel judged that this was a man who dealt with substance and did not endure fools or insignificant and phony candor. He had a determined set to the chin and lips that were spread in a friendly smile. Densler guessed his age at about 30. He was dressed immaculately in a white linen suit without a wrinkle. A heavy gold chain dipped from a left vest pocket that was attached to a large gold watch inside the right pocket. A low-crowned hat with a wide brim sat squarely on his head. Densler might have pegged him as a dandy, but the look of elegance was betrayed by a pair of worn leather boots that had seen many hours in stirrups. Bell carried a thin valise and set it down beside the table.
"Colonel Densler," said Van Dorn, "this is the man I told you about, Isaac Bell."
Densler offered his hand but did not rise from his chair.
"Joe here tells me that you always get your man."
Bell grinned slightly.
"I'm afraid Mr. Van Dorn has exaggerated. I was 10 minutes too late when Butch Cassidy and Harry Longabaugh sailed for Argentina 3 years ago from New York. Their boat pulled away from the dock before I could apprehend them."
"How many agents or law enforcement officers were with you?"
Bell shrugged. "I intended to handle the matter on my own."
"Wasn't Longabaugh the Sundance Kid?" asked Densler.
Bell nodded. "He got the nickname when he tried to steal a horse in Sundance, Wyoming. He was caught and spent 18 months in jail."
"Surely you didn't expect to subdue them without a fight."
"I think it is safe to say that they would have resisted," said Bell,
without explaining how he would have single-handedly captured the former members of the infamous Wild Bunch. Van Dorn sat back in his chair, made no comment, and gave the colonel a smug look.
"Why don't you sit down, Mr. Bell, and join our little game?"
Bell looked at the empty table quizzically and then at Densler.
"You appear to have no chips."
"Just a friendly little game," said Van Dorn, shuffling the deck of cards and dealing out 3 hands. "So far, I owe the colonel $8,000.
Bell sat down. The quizzical look altered to one of understanding. The game was a pretense. His chief and the colonel were sitting in the corner away from the other gamblers and playing as if they were in a serious game. He laid his hat in his lap, picked up his cards, and acted as if he were deep in thought.
"Are you familiar with the swarm of bank robberies and murders that have occurred around the western states in the past 2 years?" Densler inquired.
"Only in conversation," replied Bell. "Mr. Van Dorn has kept me busy on other cases."
"What do you actually know about the crimes?"
"Only that the robber murders anyone in the bank during the act, escapes like a spirit, and leaves no evidence behind that might incriminate him."
"Anything else?" Densler probed.
"Whoever he is," answered Bell, "he is very, very good. There have been no leads and no breaks in the investigation."
He paused and stared at Van Dorn.
Is that why I've been called here?
Van Dorn nodded.
I want you to take over the case as chief investigator.
Bell threw down a card, picked up the card that Danzler dealt, then slipped it in the fan, which he held in his left hand.
Are you a lefty, Mr. Bell? Asked Danzler out of curiosity.
No. Actually, I'm right-handed.
Van Dorn laughed softly.
Isaac can draw the derringer he hides in his hat, cock it, and pull the trigger faster than you can blink.
Danzler's respect for Bell grew during the conversation. He drew back his coat and revealed a 1903 Colt 38 caliber hammerless automatic.
I'll take Joe's word for it, but it would be interesting to put it to the test.
Danzler had not finished the sentence when he found himself staring into the twin muzzles of a derringer.
Age has slowed you, Henry, said Van Dorn. Either that, or your mind wandered.
I have to admit he is very fast, Danzler said, visibly impressed.
What office will I work out of?
Bell asked Van Dorn as he slipped the derringer back in his hat, where it fit in a small pocket inside the crown. The crimes have occurred from Placerville, California, in the west, to Terlingua, Texas, to the east, replied Van Dorn, and from Bisbee, Arizona, in the south, to Bozeman, Montana, in the north. I think it best if you operated in the center.
That would be Denver.
Van Dorn nodded.
As you know, we have an office there with 6 experienced agents.
I've worked with 2 of them 3 years ago, said Bell.
Curtis and Irvine are good men.
Yes, I forgot, Van Dorn said, now recalling. I might add, Colonel, that Isaac was responsible for the apprehension of Jack Ketchum, who was later hung for 2 murders committed during a train robbery.
He paused and reached under the table and produced an identical valise to the one Bell had carried into the gambling salon.
Bell then passed his empty valise to Van Dorn.
Inside, you will find the reports on all the crimes. Every lead so far has led up a blind alley.
When do I start?
At the next landing, which is Clarksville, you will depart and take the first train to Independence. From there, you will be given a ticket on the Union Pacific Express to Denver. You can digest and study what little clues and evidence we've gathered. Once you arrive, you'll take up the hunt for the murdering scum.
A look of anger and frustration clouded Van Dorn's brown eyes.
Sorry, I didn't give you a chance to pack when you left Chicago, but I wanted you to start as soon as possible.
Not to worry, sir, Bell said with a faint smile. Fortunately, I packed 2 suitcases for the duration.
Van Dorn's eyebrows raised.
You knew?
Let's say I made an educated guess.
Keep us informed on your manhunt, said Danzler. If you need any help from the government, I'll do all in my power to assist you.
Thank you, sir, Bell acknowledged. I'll be in contact as soon as I get a firm grip on the situation.
Van Dorn said, I'll be working in our Chicago office. Since transcontinental telephone service has yet to run from St. Louis across the prairie to Denver and beyond to California, you'll have to telegraph me on your progress.
If any, Danzler muttered sarcastically, you're up against the best criminal brain this country has ever known.
I promise I won't rest until I capture the man responsible for these hideous crimes.
I wish you good luck,
Van Dorn said sincerely.
Not to change the subject, Danzler spoke with satisfaction as he laid his card hand on the green felt. I have 3 queens.
Van Dorn shrugged and threw his cards on the table.
Beats me.
And you, Mr. Bell? Said Danzler with a crafty grin.
Isaac Bell slowly laid his cards on the table, 1 by 1.
A straight flush, he said matter-of-factly. Then, without another word, he rose and walked briskly from the salon.